This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your intrepid host as we make this triumphant return back to podcasting after a week off. To my right is the lovely and consistent Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
And next to me is the pajamaed Gina Martinez.
Correct, sir.
So it is the Walk of Shame Saturday podcast here on We Are Libertarians. Greg and Gina and myself. I'm not going to spill your beans. The three.
I might.
the two of them trudged in here in their pajamas, and I'm in my pajamas. And you know, did you kids have a wild night last night?
A little.
It was fun. It was fun.
What'd you do, Greg?
Went to Crackers. Saw some great comedians.
Oh, wonderful. Who'd you see?
Dave Landau.
Dave Landau.
That's the one I remember for sure, and he was hysterical.
Very funny gentleman. And then you drove here in the mall traffic.
Got here in the mall traffic, fought it the entire way. I don't know how you live here.
Gina and I live like a quarter of a mile from the mall. I live on one side. I'm on the west side. She lives on the east side.
East side?
And of the mall. And it's the busiest mall in the state of Indiana. So let me tell you, December and November from basically Black Friday, you just want to hang yourself when you get in your car.
It's hell.
The saving grace for me is that right as the season began, I started going to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, so there's nobody out on the roads at all.
Who would have thought that would be a blessing?
I know, yeah. That's why we can't do it on Thursday nights, because I get home, it's 7:30, I'm sleepy. I can't have you people around my house till 11 at night anymore. So, Saturdays it is. But that might mean that we can see a return of the Creightonator here on We Are Libertarians.
Oh, awesome.
He's busy. Well, be careful what you wish for, Gina. Yeah. But he will be back next week. So next episode of We Are Libertarians, we'll see the triumphant return of one Creighton Harrington. So social liberals, buckle up.
Oh, get out.
Yes. Gina, you two will get along famously.
Well, I like it when he speaks. Even if we don't agree, it's interesting
right.
to hear
Into
his
that
perspective.
Mic, baby.
Oh, my bad. Even if we don't always agree, it's really nice to hear his perspective.
Yeah.
I like to taste crazy from time to time.
So, Gina, how was your night last night? What'd you do?
I remember whiskey. There was definitely dancing involved, and the rest is kind of spotty. I met up with some friends that have been out of town for ages and got my spirit fetted.
You are wearing a lovely outfit today. Would you like to describe that for the audience?
Oh, this is my ass-kicking onesie right here. This is the Ninja Turtle Hour of Power.
And it's Raphael, in case any Ninja Turtle fans are out there.
What Toys R Us did you pick that up in?
I think it might have come from Hot Topic-ish.
Hot Topic?
Yeah.
It's not even goth.
It's a child size medium,
right.
By the way.
Yeah.
If you want to see Gina in her onesie, check out our Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. We put out a picture of Gina and her get talking pose.
Absolutely.
She's wearing her onesie covered up by a blanket with her glasses.
It's Gina's version of seductive lingerie.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, baby, this is my business onesie.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, there's only a thin layer of cotton between us and Gina.
Exciting, exciting.
I know.
That's because you make her wear a burqa.
That's right.
the rest of the time.
But my burqa is like Michelangelo Ninja Turtle?
Of course.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, kids, so much,
I have this scenario where it's Gina and that, and she's looking at somebody saying, "Will you be my master splinter?"
I do have a thing for rats.
Oh my, Gina Bear, you are a treat.
Sometimes.
So it's nice to have the trio back here. We're missing a couple peppers, but it's always good to get the gang back together. And then next week it'll be the three of us in Creighton, so it'll be like real old times.
It will.
Might invite Galt. Get crazy. So
who is Chris Galt?
That's right. Gina, can I ask why you're your Facebook name is Gina Little Champ Martinez.
Nostalgia.
What is it? Nostalgia.
Do you recall the Little Champ?
I don't.
Ugh. Ah, oh, that hurts my heart. Little Champ is the predecessor to the Circle K. They were a locally owned organization that had gas stations and whatnot speckled around Indiana.
Ah, okay.
And you were particularly partial to them?
I loved the Little Champ, yes. But they're gone.
To me, you will always be Little Champ Martinez.
Why, thank you.
Are we gonna do one of those story time with Gina's?
We might.
Push show?
We
Do might. You have time?
Yeah.
If you are a listener to this podcast, we usually promote it at the end, but we know so few of you ever make it there. half the time, I don't make it to the end of this podcast. But Gina does a podcast called Storytime with Gina, and it's spelled G-E-N-A, because her mom wanted to torture her for the rest of her life.
My dad's name's Gene.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I gotcha. And Storytime with Gina is a revealing look into the psyche. The often troubled psyche of Gina Martinez.
The truly disturbed thoughts.
Have you listened to the last two, Greg? You were on the last one.
I was on the last one. I still have not had a chance to. I got to listen to it, though. It's on my to-do list.
Give me a few keywords on that episode before Gina.
Oh, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
That's perfect.
That's perfect. That's about right. Yeah, so Gina doing well, especially on her podcast. Broadcasting genius is what I call Gina. She's my little champ.
By genius, he means savant. Of sorts.
Yes.
So we made reference to, I think we're going to have to, you know, I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk about the culture wars. I don't want to talk about Black Santa. I don't want to talk about Duck Dynasty. I don't want to talk about Pussy Boy Mick Obamacare. But I think we got to do it.
That's offensive, Chris.
Sorry. My bad. Suck it. Was that offensive?
No, not
okay,
at all.
Okay. All right. Don't want to be racist or anything. So, but...
I will pull your funding.
That's right.
Suspend you.
was that code? Mm-hmm. So
she's talking about how you're a kept man.
Yeah. So, but I think it warrants it because the only thing in the news right now is all this culture war stuff. And let me preface, so people don't read into this podcast or what I'm saying or probably what you two will say as well. I'll speak for you. I generally do not care. Okay? Right. I do not care. I am not surprised that Phil Robertson thinks the way that Phil Robertson thinks. I'm not surprised that GLAAD was offended by it.
Right.
I'm not surprised that, you know, Fox News thinks that Santa and Jesus are white. And I'm not surprised that Melissa Harris-Perry takes offense to that. I'm just not surprised by any of it, and frankly, I don't care. And I don't know how many of you out there care either. So, but I do think that it warrants a discussion on a couple of levels. You know, we seem to have, I don't know if maybe I'm just more aware, but the first point out of all of these discussions is that it seems that we have more of these little kerfuffles. You know, this is the year of Trayvon Martin. It's the year of 2013 had Paula Deen, which Paula Deen and her empire were completely destroyed. And let us go back and mention that Paula Deen, the people that accused Paula Deen of what she said and did, recanted and said that it was not true. Okay. So here's a woman who had her reputation destroyed in the media, and none of it was true. Or she was misquoted. That same thing is happening now to Phil Robertson of A&E, who I would think, you know, I've been misquoted and misrepresented in the press personally.
Right.
If you work for GQ, you're probably a pretty darn good reporter, and you probably were real careful about that quote. So Phil Robertson probably said it, and that was verbatim. So we'll go with the benefit of the doubt of GQ at this point. And that is all happening now to Phil Robertson as well. So we seem to be having more of these psychotic episodes in the press where somebody says something offensive and then the machine goes to work to destroy this person. It's not censorship in the definition of the word censorship. It's not. It has nothing to do with the First Amendment. Greg, explain the difference between what is happening to Phil Robertson and his First Amendment speech being violated.
Well, I mean, if his First Amendment speech was being violated, there'd be criminal penalties for what he said.
Exactly. The First Amendment protects you from the government saying that you can't say something. The First Amendment protects you from the government being...
it's like Pussy Riot.
Yeah, Pussy Riot in Russia, where they sang... What was the gist of their... It was anti-Russian, anti-Putin stuff.
Yeah, it was essentially authoritarian.
And so this girl punk band, and they also, I think, had a lot of sexual lyrics, obviously, you know, right. being named Pussy Riot.
I think it was anti the church, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. that got them actually locked away.
And so they go to jail, and they're criminalized for their speech. We don't have that here, although we do have, you know, community standards, and you have the Janet Jackson affair, and you have... Howard Stern and Bubba the Love Sponge and all these people getting, you know, fined by the FCC for overtly sexual talk. But that's about as close as it gets to, well, we have seen journalists in 2013 being cracked down on and criminalized.
Say, that is kind of trying to keep track of the government and get transparency is something that they crack down on. But actually just being able to say what you believe is not something that is yet illegal.
Right. So... Phil Robertson's First Amendment rights were not violated in any way, shape, or form. You can argue that he was censored by A&E because he was put on suspension because he said, essentially, I don't understand gay people. I like the vagina. If you had to compare the vagina to a man's butthole, I would prefer the vagina. I think it's more attractive. I'm not going to speak for the lady on the show, but... I would think Greg and I would probably agree with that sentiment.
I'm not down with butthole or vagina, for the record.
All right. Yeah, I might be with you on that. Let's just keep it all in our pants or our onesie. So, but, you know, the part that got him in trouble is that he went on to put homosexuality and bestiality in the same sentence.
And terrorism, if I'm not mistaken.
And you know, he said something to the effect of, homosexuals and bestiality people and terrorists and all these things are bad for society. Okay? Christians, do me a favor. Erase the word bestiality from your vocabulary.
Right.
Because you sound like a lunatic when you say that sort of thing.
No doubt.
And
it's one of the most offensive things you can possibly say. And even if deep down you feel... I mean, it's basically like... For me, that seems like like saying the N-word, you know? Like, it's just incredibly offensive. Am I surprised that Phil Robertson feels that way? Hell no. Not in the least, because going into the show, he had sermons out there where he said similar things, and A&E said to him, keep it on the DL. So their shock at his words... really don't carry water because they knew that he had these opinions going into it. And as we speak, until Christmas Day, there is a 24/7 Duck Dynasty marathon going on A&E. So they're milking it for all that it's worth.
It's great business. Great business.
I noticed the day... Okay, so Duck Dynasty, I'll be honest, I discovered that it existed while I was in the unit, which is what we call the nut house in this range.
Story time with Gina.
Right, yeah. And so while in the unit, one of the guys that was more colorful just really had to have his Duck Dynasty. So I watched it. I didn't hate the show, which I don't care for much reality TV. But the morning that I woke up and my feed was full of Duck Dynasty stuff, and I had weighed in on it, I went to Walmart for the first time in probably 5 years.
Huge licensing deal with Walmart.
Holy shit, it was everywhere. I went to a Village Pantry. It was everywhere. There were lighters and flashlights, and I had no idea that this was such a phenomenon within our community.
Yeah, it's the number one rated TV show of all time.
What?
A number one rated cable TV show of all time. It's a huge, huge program. It's a great show. I love it. I love watching it. I like the message that it has. It calls back to the TV of yore where everybody learns something at the end of the show and comes away with some certain value. And... they are incredibly popular, and they're licensing their brand out in as many directions as humanly possible. And when I was in Walmart yesterday, a lot of stuff was sold out, but there was a few Duck Dynasty items that were marked down. It was manager special, 20% off. Like, move this product, move.
I mean, like, they are to Walmart as, like, Jesus Christ is to Rome. Like,
right.
They're everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, now, I hate to do this because you know where I stand on all issues gay.
Right.
But I did look up his quote, and one of the things that kind of spoke to me that I can kind of get behind is that he ends it by saying, however, I would never treat anyone with just disrespect just because they're different from me. We are all created by the Almighty, and like him, I love all humanity. We would all be better off if we loved God and loved each other.
Right.
As far as I can tell, I mean, that's a pretty well-stated statement. I mean, that seems heartfelt and not hateful. It's not like he's saying they're all gonna burn.
No, but he threw in very very barbed buzzwords.
He mentioned like bestiality and terrorism.
Yeah,
and that's the part that got him. But bottom line, the show is the number one rated cable TV show of all time. So you know that the majority of the audience that is watching this feels similar to the way that he feels. There's a large segment of our population that believes along the same lines that he does about gay issues, which that's their right. They can feel that way. Where we have an issue with it here on as libertarians is when they try to legislate that.
Right.
If you try, it is okay for Phil Robertson to have his values. If Phil Robertson feels that way, fine. As long as his personal values don't start harming others or he is forcing others to do something. So if he is going out and physically hurting people or torturing people for living a certain lifestyle, that's wrong.
Right.
And if he goes to the government to do it for him, that's wrong. And I would say that on the opposite side, it's not right for you to shut down churches because they don't believe with your lifestyle, or to
except Westboro Baptist,
right? Yeah, well, them, but
you know they serve a purpose. I don't. Right. I can't even say I would shut them down.
Honestly, I would say that they bring people together more than they divide.
Exactly,
because they bring
the protagonists.
Right,
they're incredible protagonists.
So you know what he said at the end there is like, hey, I'm not ever going to disrespect people. I want to love all people. And I don't know. I think it is unfair to judge a man on the entirety of his character by one sentence.
Right.
You know, and
Or a paragraph
that could have been misquoted or could have been taken out of context. Or even if it weren't, that is one belief that he holds. Does that make the entirety of the man a bad person?
Obviously, I don't think so. But at the same time, I think the outrage people are feeling has to do with him losing his contract with the with the show.
And to an extent, America just needs to admit that we're drama queens.
We are. Absolutely.
We are. We would be so angry if we didn't have the culture wars. Because what would we do? We wouldn't have the Kardashians. We wouldn't have Amanda Bynes, Charlie Sheen, all these events that keep popping up. We wouldn't have, and we enjoy them so much.
Right.
Little niche industries pop up around them.
But isn't that? Pardon the phrase, throwing the Christians to the lions. Isn't it a dark form of entertainment where we like watching someone like Paula Deen get ripped apart?
Oh, we do.
I mean, it's a horrific part of our current culture where we find these people who don't have mainstream views, and we enjoy watching their world crumble because. Well, part of it probably is class jealousy. Here's a guy who is wealthy, and their TV show they want for nothing, you know. But they've built
but
up their
they
own
live
empire.
In like a trailer.
Well, they live in a very small house, but the rest of the family lives in mansions, and they're not afraid to show off their toys.
Okay,
but they're all self-made. I mean, they came from nothing.
They developed a duck call that is pretty much the gold standard in that industry.
Yeah, they're it. So. Part of that sick and twisted, you know, form of entertainment where we're watching someone who has made themselves into something as wealthy and then watching the world crumble, there's entire industries built on that. That's all TMZ is.
Exactly. And we like that. And we're very iconoclastic. We do not like for someone to be put up on a pedestal, I guess you can say, unless
but
it
we
is
put
someone
them there
unless,
repeatedly.
Yeah, unless it's someone from a cultured and very Northeastern elite liberal background, then it's it's okay to put them up on that pedestal. But if you are a guy like this, a
right.
Southern Christian, you know, even though you can end it with, like, you know, Gina read his words, he's not going to change the way he treats people. If you have that belief, America can't wait to come after you.
But he doesn't treat people badly. He just holds views that are different. And, like, he made some comments in the interview about race where I didn't understand all the brouhaha over Jim Crow laws because all the black people that I knew seemed happy.
Well,
like, which, not yeah. the most progressive line of thinking, but...
I read that, know. Too, and from what I was able to gather from the statement, as it was reported, was that he said, you know, we were white trash, we were in the fields together with the black people, and that he never heard anybody saying, you know, down with whites, essentially.
He was talking about his own personal experience. He was not talking about society at large.
Right.
And that's why...
And he wasn't,
you know,
in an area, most likely, where there were lynchings and some of the craziness that we might have experienced here in the Heartland and further north. Because that era prior to the civil rights movement was... It was a lot uglier up here than it may have been down where he was.
Honestly, I listened to a study by an IU professor who literally wrote the history book on Indiana. I think his name is James Madison. And he wrote a book called Lynching in the Heartland that I read. And he talked about the lynching in central East Indiana that was remarkable in the 1930s because it was one of the very few lynchings in Indiana that were... They don't even know if it was Klan-based or not. So that aspect, it was on C-SPAN. It was their Lectures in History podcast. So go check that out. An interesting look at the Klan post-1900.
And we have a very, very long Klan history in this state.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, having the only elected leader that was an active member of the Klan.
Right.
And he talked about that. He talked about D.C. Stevenson, who was... But anyway, so we're kind of floating away, but... You know, Steve Martin actually put out a tweet yesterday. It was a play on the word lasagna, and it was, how do you pronounce the word lasagna? And the guy spelled it L-O-S-N-I-A. And Steve Martin said, it depends on what side of town you are. Are you in Harlem or the Upper West Side? And, yeah. And so he deleted it and spent the rest of last night apologizing for it. But do you think that Steve Martin's career will be destroyed because of one errant tweet?
No, because he's got the proper friends. He's shaking the right hands. He abides by the media intelligentsia,
right?
And so he'll be protected. You know, it's when it's one of these guys that
Alec Baldwin got fired from MSNBC for saying the F word, essentially faggot. I apologize,
which is shocking because I can't believe they fired him for that.
Yeah. And honestly, I was kind of looking forward to Alec Baldwin's. I don't share a lot of common views with Alec Baldwin, but I really love his podcast. I think he's a fascinating interviewer, and I was looking forward to the show. And he says he did not say that in his defense. So, and MSNBC canceled the show before it even began.
They might have actually got viewers if they left him on.
Right.
Because now they have none.
Yeah. Duck Dynasty. Look at
yeah.
This is going to be the largest. I bet they pull 20 million viewers.
Oh,
and, at some point.
And that's the thing is, look who their viewers are. I mean, granted, since it's such a huge audience, but they're very much more of the people who identify with Phil. You know, they are more of the Christian conservative crowd. You know,
right.
Especially a lot of them, it's got more of a lower socioeconomic crowd that watches it. And if they would have stuck by him, if A&E would have said, no, listen, he can say what he wants to say, it would have been the smartest business move. It would
right.
have endeared their fans to them even more. Granted, the advertisers might have started to pull away a bit, but they would have come storming back. Look at Tiger Woods.
It's the Fox News syndrome. When you have, if you look at the advertisers on CNN versus Fox News, CNN has like American Airlines and Cisco and very mainstream advertisers. But if you look at Fox News, it's
gold,
you know, gold.
Reverse
mortgages. No offense, Greg. The the slippy things in the tub so you don't break your hip.
Life I alert. Mean,
but guess what? Their money's green. So, you know, A&E will always find an advertiser for that show just because of the ratings. But it was interesting that Glenn Beck came out and said, you know, you leave A&E, you come on the Blaze. And if that happened, that would create that network. They'd be on Comcast. And
he needs that.
Yeah.
You know, essentially anchor property.
And he's basically saying, I'm never going to censor you for a thing. Do what you want. But yeah, I mean, A&E just, that's the thing. With half the country, A&E is now mud, where before they had no opinion of A&E. Now 50% of the country hates A&E. But if they hadn't done what they did, 50% of the country would have hated A&E.
Yeah.
So, you know, why put yourself in that position?
But the 50% that hates them now are the people who actually watch A&E. If they had stuck
right.
by them, the 50% who hate them never watched Duck Dynasty anyway.
Right.
So
it's not like you lost haters.
You know, to me, it was a really poor business decision.
Okay, but they put them on suspension, and then they, what, bring them back after Christmas? When nobody is thinking about this anymore, when nobody's watching, you know, what was interesting to me is that they did it right away. Normally, you'd think that this would come out, it'd get published, it'd kind of get some press, and then after about a week of it kind of building, then they go, we've decided that we're going to put them on suspension. They did it, like, as soon as the article was published, like, immediately, which makes me think that maybe there is some tension between these guys and A&E that... You just don't make that act that have that reaction if you have a great partnership, and so I think there's some tension between.
Yeah, that was what I was reading. Is that Phil's not sure he wants to do the show anymore anyway? Before
yeah.
he did this interview, and this was the first step in getting off.
Right. Was that code?
Well,
was that code?
Yeah, as I understand it, the whole family's sitting down and they're not doing the show.
Yeah, they're going to stick together, which is
doesn't surprise anybody. If
they didn't do that, I mean, that would damage their brand, right? They're this
well,
close...
even at that, their family seems to be pretty genuine.
Right. They're a close-knit family, and if they don't support one of their family members, then they're screwed. But I do want to read a tweet from Eli Braden. Phil Robertson has a lot to say about gay sex for a guy who's devoted his life to phallic tubes men blow in the woods. I thought that was an excellent tweet, so follow Eli Braden. Okay, so Phil Robertson issue resolved. Even Gina doesn't give a about this.
Not
no.
A bit. Yeah.
But it's really political because the various fundraisers for the Gay and Lesbian Alliance,
bingo,
Christian conservative families, if they don't have this, they don't have money, because really the trend right now, New Mexico just passes gay marriage. The
yep.
trend
right.
is towards
Utah.
That. Exactly. And so that's what we're moving towards as a society. And if you're the person that's leading the charge, what do you have to run on or fundraise on? And if you're the person who's against it, society's going that way anyway. What do you have to fundraise on unless we keep
right.
having these events?
Yeah.
And this is great. I mean, GLAAD and some of the other gay rights groups immediately put out statements. They put their machine into work to make this an issue. They went to Salon and Huffington Post. And, you know, what happens in the media is things become big on the Blazes, Huffington Post, Daily Callers, Salon, Slates of the world, and then it gets bumped up to ABC and CBS and CNN. And so if it can really get hits and traction and Facebook likes and comments on the blogs, then it gets bumped up to a higher level of media because it is shown that it will get an audience.
Yep.
And so the way that the national media works now is they test what is going on in the blogs. And you'll see one story discussed across the board. I mean, all these national blogs are now is just interlinking to each other, arguing amongst each other, which is good and bad. So, once GLAAD did that, and once the opposite, the Christian conservative groups went to the Blaze, to the Daily Caller, to Drudge, the two sides start working their machine, getting the message out, creating discussion, and raising money. And that's really what it's about at the end of the day.
Yep, because without it, it's not there.
That's right. So if you'd like to fight that, then please, there is a donation button at the bottom of WeAreLibertarians.com. We could use some money. So,
you know, there's a little bit, to me, it's kind of interesting to think about the gay marriage. And his comment wasn't about gay marriage, but when you don't have that federal standard, when, you know, DOMA was struck down, and the way the Constitution's written, it goes to the states. In the states, certain states are, in fact, you know, passing gay marriage amendments, allowing it. But other states, like Indiana, I don't ever see that kind of amendment getting through.
Right.
How do you deal with that politically from a libertarian perspective?
Gina Bear. All right. I would
pass.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? I mean, from any perspective.
I think in Indiana it's going to get killed, for it, first of all.
I don't think we'll ever allow it.
I disagree. I think that if you look at the polling here in Indiana, which is one of the reddest states, and this speaks to the national trends. When you look at Indiana, which is one of the most conservative states in all senses of the word, they do not like change. We are one of two states. I think we're the last state that doesn't allow alcohol sales on Sunday. When you look at daylight savings time, only pieces of Arizona and Indiana didn't pass daylight savings time. After 30 years, we finally implemented it under Mitch Daniels in 08. So it's very resistant to change. But when you look at the polling here in Indiana for gay marriage, it's gone from 40% for to nearly 60% for here in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a red state. The culture is changing on this issue so quickly that after 20, 30 years, you know, it's not like, you know, it's civil rights. We all think of the late 60s. As the catalyst for change, but it took many, many decades to finally get to the Martin Luther King era of civil rights. We are just, it's a lightning fast shift, and even the government is being swift. So I don't necessarily think that you're going to see states like Indiana never change.
Well, the thing is, though, we would have to have legislation to actually allow it right now, correct?
You would have to go back and repeal the law that defines marriage in Indiana.
Exactly. And that's what I don't think will happen, because we are a very red state.
Right.
I can tell you right now, Mike Pence has presidential aspirations, so he will not touch that at all.
Was that code? No, I don't think that he's going to do anything, and I don't think that it's something that's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years. I'm talking 10 years from now.
Yeah, I don't know that ever in a red state like here, personally. But just because you have to actually enact legislation in order for it to be allowed. So for a libertarian perspective, pass a law, bro. Is this one of those times that's okay?
You're not passing a law, you're repealing a law. That's the difference. So,
or you're applying it more universally.
Well, what you're doing is you redefine the law as, you know, between two consenting adults or multiple consenting adults. Let's get crazy.
But then now we're bringing going into Phil Robertson.
All right.
Now what about animals? What about robots?
Well, I mean, no, in like 26 states in the nation, bestiality is acceptable. Like, you can have sex with a horse.
Yeah, but can you marry one?
In Indiana.
Well, true.
In Indiana, you can.
But if a horse can't say, I do, there's not much threat of you having a marriage to a horse.
What about Mr. Ed?
Right. I mean, Mr. Ed is like the ever-present, what am I trying to say here? The ever-present thing that's different and
the exception.
Stuff. Thank you, exception. Big words.
Exceptionalism. American exceptionalism.
Come on, Gina, focus.
But I'm trying.
You
can't even
remember
something.
Exception.
The hard part is, though, for me is, okay, so we define it. We define it as two consenting beings, multiple consenting beings. We still have to have a definition if we're going to get society to accept that. And if we don't have that, then it becomes marriage is no longer a state institution.
Right.
And so what happens to the wife that just has an existing agreement? This is where, I guess, the contracts up front that are agreed to.
Yeah, let me outline for you the way that I think marriage ought to work. Okay, in a world where there is zero government marriage, then what would happen is instead of divorce attorneys, you'd have marriage attorneys. And so the prenup would become a fairly standard agreement. It'd become standardized. It'd become as, you know, you don't sit there and write out your marriage license paperwork. That marriage license paperwork has been written for you. And so you would find a lawyer. You go to a lawyer or someone who handles marriage contractual law. Most of the easy term would be a lawyer. and so they would have a pre-prepared document, and then the two of you would negotiate that together. And instead of splitting up your things when you absolutely hate each other and you want to kill one another. You're deciding upon the exit strategy when you're in love and your partners. And so then divorce, if it takes place, when and if, depending on, you know, what your track record is, then you would have an amicable, that would just be enforced. You'd enforce the contract law. You can't go back and change it because the contract that you had was written before you got married. And so there's less trauma to you. There's less trauma to the other partner. There's less trauma to your children if you have them. So to me, it seems like a much better plan than what we have now, which is government controlling marriage and horrible, messy divorces that most people experience.
Yeah, no, I really like that idea. I think you would have to have some pretty sophisticated contracts worked out up front, you know, like let's say a cheating clause, the terms of proving said cheating, multiple different ways that change the asset allocation upon split.
Right.
Have two people that can work together amicably for the best interest of their children, which is mm-hmm. not unheard of.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, so it would be up to the individual couple should you get a contract or not.
That would be tough, though, if you're a newlywed and you're like, all right, should we get divorced?
Right.
I'm only going to give you 30%, sweetie.
Yeah. You know, that's, yeah, right.
It forced some very awkward conversations very early on in the relationship.
Yeah, but aren't those discussions that aren't those good discussions to have about... I just think that you'd have a healthier marriage if the two adults sat down when they're getting married and said, these are the things that I value, these are the things that I'd like to take with me. Through that process, you may discover that your husband or wife or whomever is money hungry, or they value this, or you might see things that might make you rethink the marriage in the first place.
Very true.
And so I think it would be a very healthy exercise. The exercise that you get before you get married is you sit down with your pastor, if you have a church wedding, and have a 5-minute discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have no discussion about things. I mean, it's
there's no vetting process.
Right. You don't really have these in-depth discussions unless you have a healthy relationship. And from what I can tell, most people don't have a healthy relationship. So,
no.
I mean, or you get people like me who hide many, many things to trick your beautiful wife into marrying you.
So, it's a trap.
It's a trap. That's right. So I just think that the idea of a governmentless marriage system is a much healthier system for society and for individuals, because you're putting some forethought into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have one group or another forcing their ideas, their values, and their ideology on the concept of marriage. If your church doesn't believe that gay people ought to get married, then... fine, go to that church. If you go to a church that does believe gay people can get married, great. The two can coexist, and they can work on projects that feed the homeless. And you know what happens? When we are not using the government as a tool to fight, to try and impose our values on others, there becomes less contention between the two sides. And so those churches will find that these issues like poverty, these issues like homelessness, these issues like widows and orphans become a bigger deal because they're not at each other's throats. They're not worried about how they look if they associate with that church downtown.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have a better system than, you know, than any government plan.
Government forced freedom.
Exactly right. Yeah. So that's my spiel.
Yeah. No, I like it. I find it interesting because I know it's so much more difficult. Like, the theory is so much more difficult than the practicality, you know, of actually getting a gay marriage or allowing gay marriage in Indiana would be such a gargantuan task.
But see, I think that there's a group called Freedom Indiana right now, and they are trying to stop the marriage amendment. They're trying to stop discrimination from being put into the Indiana Constitution, which says that marriage is between one man and one woman. And companies like Lilly, Cook Medical, some of the biggest companies in Indiana all have banded together with conservatives, libertarians, and Democrats and liberals to form this coalition called Freedom Indiana. The leader of it is one of the most experienced and skilled Republican operatives in the state of Indiana, and she's doing a very good job. And they're their message is that if you put this legislation into the Constitution, if you make this amendment a part of our Constitution, you're going to lose business and we're going to move elsewhere.
Yeah.
We're going to find ways. It's an economic discussion. Has nothing to do with the values of the issue. It has everything to do with the economics of the issue, the freedom of the issue. And I think that's a very smart way to think about it. And I think libertarians need to not get wade into the debate of whether or not homosexuality is a sin or whether or not gay people should get married. The discussion should be, what is marriage? Why is the government in charge of it? Do we need the government to be in charge of it? And what does a governmentless marriage society, marriage institution look like? And I think if you talk about how it looks or how it would operate, such as we've done the last 10 minutes, then I think people go, that makes sense. But if you sit there and go, you know what? I think gay people should get married. Or, you know what? I don't think gay people should get married. Like, then it just becomes a contentious issue.
But if you can present a solution.
You present the solution first. You don't lead with your chin. You're going to be fine. You know, so I think that's the better way anyways, because all you do is you're going to offend somebody in the room. All Phil Robertson did is make a group of people hate him.
Yeah.
And if he just had never said anything about it or had presented a solution or had presented a more positive view, then he wouldn't be in the trouble he's in.
Exactly.
You know, so there's, and I think Christians, by and large, have fallen into this thing where that is their singular issue. Poverty relief, mutual aid societies to help people with disabilities.
Shishmortion?
No, we're not talking about that again. Widows, orphans, things that bring a community together.
Things that Jesus spoke about.
The things that Jesus actually talked about. That's what Christians ought to be talking about. And Phil Robertson didn't talk about that. Maybe he did, but see, GQ didn't put that in because that wouldn't get the
bestiality. You know,
sales. Right. Bestiality really moves publication. but
and meanwhile, Congress passed CISPA and we were all debating
really?
Ducks. I believe so, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. I'm totally sort of out of the loop on what's going on.
It wasn't in the news cycle on Thursday night. That was the last time I really looked at followed the news, unless it happened yesterday. I'll have to double check, though.
Look it up for me, because you know how I am with ignorance.
It could have just passed like on
a
committee vote or something like that.
So
not an actual...
All right, so we've resolved that Duck Dynasty is not an issue and we don't care. We've resolved that marriage should be the way that Chris Spangle thinks it ought to be. I'm imposing my values on you.
Can we just elect you king?
That's right. That's what we're going for with this podcast. This is my promotional vehicle to becoming ruler of the earth.
We were doing
You're
it for
a very
free
charismatic
for
young German.
Right.
Now all you need is a villain.
Peffers, where is he? So this is my promotional vehicle to ruling the world. Tens of people at a time. okay, so let's... So, hey, this Christmas season, get talking. Okay.
Get talking.
When people bring up the Duck Dynasty issue, share your vision of marriage without government involved and say, you know what? It's a moot point. If you disagree or agree with Phil Robertson, it wouldn't matter because this is how marriage ought to work. And gay people can go be gay people, and Christians who like to talk about bestiality can go be Christians that like to talk about bestiality.
Totally.
So
just don't legislate your feelings on each other.
That's right. No force, no government force. So, but it's important when you're with your family members and these issues come up that you get talking with them.
It
right,
sounds
Greg?
Like you got that from a propaganda ad from the administration. Am
propaganda?
Huh?
No propaganda from the administration. So there was a bit of a kerfuffle this week with the Obama administration. Things got a little bit silly.
Uh-huh.
So what did they do, Greg?
They made some very, very wimpy ads encouraging people to talk about the Health Care Act, like when you're around the Christmas table or around the Hanukkah table, I guess. I'm not sure.
Christmas Hanukkah.
Yeah. And they're encouraging people to get out, learn about Obamacare, spread the word, talk about it. I guess educate your family on it is what they were really trying to do. It was kind of a grassroots level thing, probably the brainchild of Cass Sunstein.
Which... You know what? It makes total sense. It goes back to the Harvey Milk style of activism. If you saw the movie Harvey Milk, it's one of the best movies about grassroots organizing I've ever seen. And what he says is, listen, if you want this to pass, if you want us to be accepted as the gay community, you need to call your friends, call your family, call your coworkers and say, listen, I'm gay. Do I seem like some sort of weirdo bestiality pervert? No, I'm normal. I'm just like you. You love me. Let's move on. Okay? So it does seem to make sense. Like, hey, you know, if you care about Obamacare, if you think that it's a good idea, then get talking with your friends and family about it.
But they haven't even... It's a really tough thing, though, because one, they don't want you to talk about it because they can't even get the website working, so they're making it very difficult to sign up. Two, they've canceled policies for people who aren't going to be able to keep the ones they liked, and now they can't get the new ones because the website doesn't work. And yet, if you learn about it, you're not going to like it, but you're supposed to go out and just spread what? I mean, I don't know if there's anywhere that just has an easy breakdown of the healthcare law that you can go and say, here are the benefits.
You're basically just going to be spouting uneducated talking
exactly.
points about
so,
how people aren't going to be hurt.
Yeah, and they are. They very much are, especially until we know whether people that are on the federal exchange qualify for subsidies or not, which as of right now, it looks like they are. But once this court case gets decided, like in Indiana, if you buy through the exchange, you may not get that subsidy.
Dang. Right.
Yeah. So until that's settled, I would say do not talk about it. The best thing for Democrats is to pretend they were against it. And they, you know, I thought it was a terrible political decision to start this around Christmas.
Okay, so that wasn't really the issue. Who cares about that? Listen, the propaganda machine of Cass Sunstein is going to do whatever they can to try and build this up. The funny part of this is the photo that they use, which we have, if you go to our Facebook page and you look for the picture of Gina and her Ninja Turtle onesie.
Represent.
thank you to Richard James McGurr, I think that's how you say his name, for posting the actual photos on that thread. So go check that out if you want to see the actual pictures. But it is a gentleman with, he has on a flannel onesie and he's holding a cup of coffee. He's not holding it from just the handle. He's lovingly cupping it under the cup like a breast in which he's never touched. And wearing a pair of Rachel Maddow glasses.
Yeah, the Rachel Maddow glasses.
Horn-rimmed Rachel Maddow glasses with a very curious look on his face.
He reminds me of the young man from Roseanne and the Big Bang Theory.
He does. He does look a lot like, you know,
that guy.
But much more feminine than that guy.
Much more.
Okay.
Much more.
Yeah.
So, very wimpy.
He's the kind in Step Brothers. Remember when the guy that works with Will Ferrell's brother says he just wants to keep punching Will Ferrell in the face?
Right.
That's that. I get that feeling looking at this kid. Like, I don't know why, but I just want to punch him in the face.
Why? Why do you hate Greg?
I don't hate. He's just every... I guess if we're going to talk about culture, I feel like there's a feminization of men.
Yeah,
today.
It's valid.
And,
yeah,
you know, there is science behind it. You know, our testosterone counts are about half of what men that were born in the 30s are. Not entirely sure why, if it's an evolutionary thing, but...
Probably dietary, too.
Yeah, it could be dietary, could be Monsanto.
And sedentary, because we don't get up and do much.
Very true. I mean, it could be a lot of factors, but there's this trend towards androgynous, or I guess gender neutrality. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, they're... And let's talk about if that's good or not. You know, the idea, let's talk about what the ideal man should be, according to Greg Lenz. Explain to me what you think maleness is. What is masculinity?
I don't know that it's... I mean, honesty, loyalty, courage, essentially anything that's like a Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway book. You know, no, the idea of the guy you can rely on, the rock.
So would you say wearing a flannel shirt but not a flannel onesie? You know, jeans, very much a John Wayne type of person where they're the hero saving the day. They're, you know, their word is their bond. They're just sort of, I mean, John Wayne is the ideal for the male of the 20th century. I mean, up until the late 90s, and then it was like, what, Kurt Cobain? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So would you say that John Wayne, you know, when he was the good character in the movie, would be your ideal man?
Yeah, I mean, that's the representation. Right. I think he represents, and it's not so much that's what how you look, mm-hmm. period, but I feel that the feminization of men is being pushed by the left.
What is the relationship of that male with women in your world?
That relationship with
women?
Yeah,
like, what is the relationship, what are the male and female roles, the gender roles in... Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep, very. And right. I have a very 1950s view on that.
Right.
But I don't. I wouldn't enforce that on anyone. And I,
right.
You know, I look at it, the man's a provider and the woman raises a family, because that's hard. I mean, that's harder than being a provider, in my opinion.
Right.
And it's clearly, it's two distinct roles. Both of them, as long as they're okay with it, you pursue that option.
So, Gina.
Yes.
You are, Greg is very much a... conservative leaning person
and you accuse me of being on the left, but that's not always true.
No, I don't think you're on the left. I think you have very progressive notions of
what could be
of the world. Yeah. Much more so when you contrast it to Greg.
Right.
So in your mind, what is the idea of masculinity in your world?
No, I'm daydreaming. I mean, the idea of masculinity for me is a very fluid thing. I've met some really masculine lesbians in my lifetime, and I've met some masculine men. I don't necessarily think it's a testosterone thing, because testosterone to me leads to, in my opinion, I've seen it lead to aggression, and I don't think that aggression is masculinity necessarily. I think Greg and I actually agree on the notion of someone within the family being capable of raising children, as opposed to having to go outside of the home to look for work.
Right.
To me, it's kind of cockamamie that we come from a society where it used to be impossible for a woman to get work outside of the home, and now we are in just a very short amount of time in a society where it is absolutely... like imperative for a woman to get work outside of the home.
Right.
So I almost see the lifestyle that I lead as like a rebellious one, just because I stay home and raise my children. It's like taking a moment to be there for my family instead of chasing the almighty dollar.
And you do that with, I mean, it's a sacrifice for you not working for taking care of the kids. I mean,
yeah, financially. Absolutely.
Right. And it's very difficult to do that in this day and age. I mean, my grandmother helped with my grandfather's insurance company. My other set of grandparents, he worked at Lilly. She took care of the kids. And then afterwards, she didn't really work. And she didn't have to, because the salary that both of my grandfathers made covered their overhead. When you look at my parents, though, you know, my dad made a lot of money, but... It got to a certain point where my mom had to go back to work and had to get her nursing degree, and she went to work as a nurse. She had a communications degree before that, so ain't no work happening there.
Right.
Trust me. So, listen, kids, if you're going to college for liberal arts in general, but communications specifically, just quit. Just go work. Like, you're better off just sending a tweet to a producer of a radio station or a TV station and saying, can I intern, get an internship, and then quit as soon as you're in the door doing part-time work. So trust me. So she went to get her nursing degree, and they had to work. Now, there is literally no way on earth that Samantha and I could live on one income. You know, unless it was, you know, a really good income. But, you know, and we keep our overhead pretty low. Trust me, you can't get much lower than this place. So,
literally in the state, it's one of the lowest rents available.
That's right, without going Section 8. But it's not bad, you know. Hey,
no, it's a nice complex.
Cholo Run's got its charms, right, Gina?
That's what I've heard.
Let me tell you something about my apartment complex. Gina used to live here.
I did.
And she moved.
Yes.
So
she pulled
facts.
The Jeffersons.
Right. Let me tell you something about my apartment.
On up to the $25 more a month.
Right.
But a better facility.
Let me tell you something about my apartment complex. Maya chose to live here.
So, there you go.
So I live right across the building from Maya. So good times. So I guess my definition of maleness is sort of like my definition of everything else is whatever. Like, I guess I'm weird. I have strong opinions, but I don't. Like, I very much am with you, Greg, in the fact that there are certain things that men should not do, like
yeah.
wear flannel onesies or say totes or adorbs. Those are things that...
And that wasn't a shot at Matt Hurt and Tiny Ramian of The Obsessive Viewer.
It totally was. But you know what? If you're a sassy gay best friend on a TV show and you say totes and adorbs, cool with me. Fine. If you're the wacky best friend, I don't care. You know. But I think that if you're a straight male, then generally... I have somewhat of the same thoughts as you. I don't think that to be a man you have to drink. I don't think that you have to do certain things. But, you know, you don't have to be Ron Swanson. But I do think that...
He's the ideal. You'll never attain Ron Swanson.
Right.
To be a man, you must have honor and a penis.
But see, if my wife had a child and it was more beneficial for me to quit my job and stay home than for her to do that, then I totally would do that.
Yeah.
Like, I would stay home and take care of the kids and raise them and play Mr. Mom. Like, I don't, you know, if my wife for a while there, libertarians, you, my wife there for a while made a lot more money than I did. And I was okay with that. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. But I do think that maleness is the same as just being a good human being. The qualities of a male should be thoughtful, caring. I think that gentleness is something that most men don't really think about but need to work on. I think that, you know, just being a gentle person, where trying to curb your testosterone, trying to curb your appetites and get them under control so... You know, being a weightlifter, jacked up, 240 full of muscle, that doesn't make you more of a man.
No,
you know,
agreed.
It makes you sometimes more aggressive than everyone else, and that just makes you a bad person. So it very much is the same. Being a good person runs right along with being a good man. And I think the same qualities go for women, too. I don't see a lot of distinction between what the perfect man or the perfect woman is. It really just comes down to being a good person. You know, are you honest? Are you caring? Do you take care of people in their hour of need? Are you generous? Do you let things go? Ironically, the way that I think a person ought to be is outlined in 1 Corinthians 13. It's that thing that is read at every wedding. You know, love is patient, love is kind. You know, that whole section, I think, outlines what a person ought to be. They ought to be kind. They ought to be gentle. They ought not keep a record of wrongs and let things fester. And so for me, being a strong man means being a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And for my wife, you know, she's a girly girl. She's a beautician. She does her nails every night. She, you know, does her hair all the time. She's very into dressing up and being a girly kind of thing. A girly kind of thing is always what a wife wants to be called, by the way.
Brownie points.
I don't know that Gina necessarily is along those lines where she does her hair every day and puts on all kinds of makeup and
that's a no.
And does her nails and all that kind of stuff. But I would go out with Gina, you know, if I weren't married. And clearly she'd be very excited about that.
For sure.
So
I would have Spangle Bear on my arm.
That's right. You'd be
king of all the libertarians.
You'd have me on my arm. I'd have you on my shoulder. She's very little, folks, with her tiny, tiny head.
I was accused of being a six-year-old thanks to the picture that we posted online. I kind of take that as a badge of honor.
Yeah,
it is.
But see, like for me, the concept, like if my wife were more like Gina, where she weren't into like the girly things, it wouldn't matter to me, you know, because it doesn't make my wife more female or less female or any of that kind of stuff. Like, I think my wife's just as pretty without makeup. So, I don't know. I kind of am just a live and let live type of person for the most part. And I would imagine a lot of libertarians are. You know, I just think a person should decide for themselves who and what they are and be the best of that that they can be.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. So. I agree. I don't identify with even kids like 10 years younger than us. I mean, you know, or really even like 22, 23, college age guys. Guys have changed a lot, and it seems to be accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. I think the thing that is eroding is the idea of leadership. And I think that the idea of leadership where the male leads the home, where the male leads in the office or any of that, I think that's certainly broken down, and some of that is good and some of that is bad. I think that's probably what you see and go, I have an issue with that. You know, if you're a strong man, then you have strong opinions, and a lot of these pussy boys these days don't seem to have that. They're just sort of like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to sit here and listen to My Chemical Romance and read poetry.
Yeah, they're very, like, reflective.
Hey, there's nothing pussified about poetry.
Nah.
Some very manly men have written poetry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But what makes them...
Robert Browning can kiss my ass.
What makes their poetry, though, and them be masculine at the same time, is that it's excellent.
Yeah.
Right? And so maybe it's more of an aspirational thing. Like, what I associate being masculine with is the pursuit of improvement, becoming better. Like, having a goal, being... Achievement, I guess, is the right way to put it. You know, being ambitious.
But is that masculine or human?
Human. I mean, I guess it's human.
I think men are by nature more ambitious than women as far as career goals go. I, you know, it's not to say that all women are not ambitious. That's not true, because the interns that I've had, the female interns that I've had work for me in the past, have been more ambitious and more driven to do a good job, and they were more intelligent because they applied themselves more than the male interns I had. The male interns, by and large, were not driven at all to do much other than go play PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't that kind of drive. And so I think that's part of the loss of the male sensibility that is reflected as we move up forward, is that lack of drive, that lack of ambition. You know, you want to... For me, a lot of my self-worth is wrapped up in my career. And I'm very driven to be successful in my work. And sometimes that is even to a detriment to my personal relationships, which is not good. And I understand that. That's one of my weaknesses. So I personally do not understand when someone, specifically men, are not driven to be successful at work. And so I think that women a lot of times are more driven to create a successful family environment than men are. I think by and large. Of course, there are exceptions, and I'm not saying that, you know, all women love to stay at home and get in the kitchen and all that kind of bull crap.
Right.
But I mean, is that a fair assessment, that men are more career-driven and women are more family-oriented?
I mean, it depends on the individual, obviously. But there have been times in my life where I've been exceptionally driven, but in, some people would say, in the wrong direction or in different directions. I can't say that, like, it's something where wrong is a strong word, I guess, but without a clear sense of direction, I guess, would be the way. Obedience, I think, is a big issue. Some people would call it discipline, but I would, in my mind, it turns to be obedience, and that I'm not down with obeying what it is that I'm supposed to do in order to be feminine or masculine or...
Yeah, I think if your wife is telling... If a wife is telling a husband, or a wife is telling the other wife, or if one member of the couple is dictating to another... to the partner how things ought to be, I have a problem with that. And I think in society today, it is more acceptable for the wife to be the heavy and to mandate what is going on and... than it is for a male to say, this is our direction, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing. I think that is sort of, we shifted to more of a maternal culture than in the past. But I have a real issue when one member of a pair is trying to dictate behavior or standards or values and not just let the other person be.
But that also comes down to leadership, you know. If you're on a team together, a family-based team, and there needs to be a leader, then who, you know what I'm saying, like, who steps into that role? It's a tricky slope.
The way I look at it is, and what I find the most beneficial is the male, obviously, like, you know, the 1950s, he's the provider, but then the woman is the leader of the household. Where you both lead, you just have different roles, and they're entwined.
Right.
I think it comes down to just
cooperation.
Communicating to each other what your strengths are. My wife is good at paying bills, and we literally just had to pause the podcast because we got a certified lever because I owe money to the state government. So
that happened.
So we let my wife handle the bills because not because she's the woman, but because that's what her strength is. You know, and then when it comes to decisions, I would say that I'm more the alpha decider in the relationship when it comes down to certain things. Like, are we going to stay at Polo Run for another year? Are we going to re-up our lease? She has thoughts. I have thoughts. Generally, we agree on most things, but I'm the one who says, let's stay here, sign the paperwork. And that's just because that's what she, it's not because I'm the man, it's just because she just goes, okay, what do you think? She's, I don't want to say indecisive, but.
Well, I think that's another thing,
you know what
too.
I mean? So,
I think most people like to be led. You know, it's easier to be told what to do than it is necessarily to make every single decision, which is exhausting.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of times what you see in relationships is you see one person has just decided, you know what, it's going to be way easier and less mental stress for me if I just follow along.
Right. Yeah. True. Exactly right.
At least I've experienced it in my relationships.
And I know we're going to get so much hate mail from Maya for not having Maya on the gender roles discussion.
Right.
but we have done podcasts. If you look up Creating Maya, you know, and Maya's point is, yeah, those traditional roles of maleness, even of gender, just because you have a penis, it doesn't mean that you have to be masculine, or just because you have a vagina, it doesn't mean you have to be feminine. You know, it's sort of, you can be whatever you want to be. Society doesn't have to impose anything on you. Just because you're a male, it doesn't mean you have to emulate John Wayne. You can have long hair. You can change your gender. It just, everything is fluid and individual based. And so, you know, there you go. So when Maya yells at us for not having her on the show, that's a brief recap of what she believes.
And this is more commentary than it is what we want or what we expect.
No,
you know?
I think it's, we're just taking an issue like we always do and trying to figure it out, define it a little bit.
And I just feel like it's been a very quick acceleration. Now, Maya would definitely disagree that it's been a long time in the process and, you know, a long time coming where you reach gender neutrality that's socially acceptable. But I feel like in the last 10 years, really, there has been a rapid acceleration of it. I mean, look at that picture. In the past, if you wanted somebody to talk about Obamacare and you'd make an ad, get talking, it wouldn't be that guy.
My right. first reaction, I think 10 years ago, my first reaction would have been, look at that homo. my first reaction was typical college asshole. And so I think that 10-year shift of, I think that's an interesting thought process. And I don't know what it says, but you know, I didn't equate that with gay where I would have 10 years ago.
True.
You know.
No, I looked at it and was like, that's a clean hipster, and I hate hipsters.
Damn hipsters.
Who doesn't hate hipsters, though? It's almost the hip thing to do to hate the hipster.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So, Gina, how do you like your men? Let's put it out there.
I like my men patient. Okay. I like my men...
I'll wait for you to finish. Go ahead.
Attentive.
Mm-hmm.
I like my men... exactly. I like my men intelligent.
Okay. Can't help you there, then.
Right.
I'm out.
I like my men creative.
Greg's out.
Yep. I'm not patient either.
Right.
I personally look for someone who's more of a dreamer than a follower.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know.
But let me ask you this. You're describing Gina with a penis.
I mean, who doesn't, though, look for the other part of themselves that's present in someone else?
Wouldn't you do better with, I don't know, let's see, what's Greg wearing today?
the North Face?
The North Face, a gentleman who has 1950s roles and wears a golf hat with golf shoes. And
these aren't golf shoes.
I don't know what they are.
I wouldn't mind a golfer. I used to be a golfer myself.
I don't know fashion. I'm a man. So
says the man wearing fuzzy chenille loafers.
That's right. Listen, I am in a Jeremiah Morrill t-shirt for State House.
True.
Go get a time machine and vote. And then I'm wearing slippers. So I'm not fashion conscious. So the bottom line is, you can, I think it's Martinez at We Are Libertarians. If you're single, then
we're doing this.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm just kidding. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on gender roles, Gina Bear?
I think they should be fluid. I don't think the gender should necessarily assign your role. I'm not a fan of the pussification of men. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think a man, I don't know. I mean, if that is who you want to be that, and I'll support you in it, is what I'm saying. But don't let it be a situation where society has whittled you down to what they feel you ought to be. Like an ideal partner. Let's just take out the man element. Let's take out the gender element altogether. An ideal partner is someone who is supportive and patient, and can give you direction when you need it. Like, I tend to be, this is going to shock you, I tend to be a very hard-headed individual. Right?
What?
I know, right?
I'm that guy who's got all figured out until she gets to looking at the and suddenly the doesn't make any sense.
That was a lot of
Yeah, well, that, again, this is going to shock you, but I'm full of sometimes. So, for me personally, I need someone who can, I guess, be attentive enough to know where I am in my thought processes, and it helps if they are enlightened enough to point me in the right direction from there. I have a tendency to find myself surrounded by people who listen, but with the intent to ridicule as opposed to help enrich.
Right.
So that's not always the most positive for me either.
Those are bad friends.
Let me tell you why that. Let me tell you why that's
great friends. But
hold on, let me tell you why that's a stupid plan. Okay, I'm just joking.
Go for it. Go for it.
Let me tell you why you're an idiot.
Right.
Okay. So you said there was actual science on the pussification of men.
On the testosterone count, ours, like our generation's testosterone count, is half of what our grandparents were.
Really?
Yep.
What do you think that is? Like too much. Like rice or too much
soy, I would assume. Isn't soy? It soy have a lot of natural estrogen?
They're investigating tons of causes, and there are so many factors and variables to consider. They haven't specifically named
obesity,
one.
Obesity, I know that being overweight doesn't give you, it lessens your testosterone and gives you more estrogen.
Yeah, but I mean,
which is why I have a voice. I have a voice like this. Welcome to We Are Libertarians.
You know what's funny? What they call though the gender neutrality. The new term is gender queer. That's really? Like the, kind of, that's the accepted in the lexicon. That's the word.
How did that word come back?
I don't know. You know, I thought it was kind of an offensive term.
I'm on your side, so I hate the word queer. Like, uh-huh. The word queer really bristles the hair on the back of my neck. But I have friends who have studied it
duly
extensively
noted.
At the educational level, and they embrace genderqueer and
do.
Queer in ways that just, I mean, it's always griped my ass, and I have one friend in particular that I have this conversation with all the time because he's a very big fan of the term genderqueer, and I'm like, what are you doing?
But you know what? If it's not offensive anymore, like, the word is offensive if the group deems it offensive.
Right.
And if it's now back, then it's not, I mean, it's, and it's all intent.
It's
like, if I walked up to you and be like, nice hat, queer, then it'd be wrong. But if I walked up and it said, listen, it's a genderqueer thing, then it's different. It's clinical. You
and
know what I mean?
I think for me personally, it comes from being raised in a very, I have to choose my words carefully here. Let's say a very traditional, conservative, not necessarily open and accepting environment.
You grew up in the Robertson household.
Well, it's not the household so much as the community. And there were people who would go, like, queer bashing and pick up a baseball
right.
bat and go inflict harm on people that they thought were different enough from them to deserve to be beaten. So for me, the term queer was always, like,
right,
like offensive to the core. But if the group is embracing it now, then maybe I should jump on board.
I think it's well chosen because it's one of those, it's a phrase you're going to remember. You're going to hear it once. You're going to remember it. It'll become sort of used more frequently within our in our interactions, and it'll pick up steam, but I still think eventually it'll be changed, because even in the medical community, they going back, you know, 200 years,
right,
how they essentially considered African-American skin a very offensive term and used that medically, and it's not something that stuck. You know, they had to change it as time and society moved forward, and I think that's what'll happen with genderqueer.
Would you like to share with us? What are you talking about?
Like the word colored, or what are you saying?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. It's okay. It's not the N-word. Go ahead.
For me, like, etymology of
I
words.
Love etymologies. They're great. The little green beans that you eat.
Yes. At the Japanese restaurants.
Right.
Little etymology. So anyway, queer having its root being strange was always more negative in connotation to me than gay having its root being happy.
Right.
So I embrace terms like gay, and then I get, you know, backlash because I'm you know, generalizing or whatever. And so the LGBTQI, just becomes right. a mouthful, which, I mean, perhaps I should spit out a mouthful, but damn you, Chris.
There have been a lot of double entendres today on this show.
I know. I'm going to have to insert
a
like,
load of them, if you
a
will.
A load.
I'm going to have to insert like all kinds of Beavis and Butthead laughter.
He's inserting now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you feel, Gina Bear?
Yes, sir.
As our LGBTQ friendly representative on the show here.
The ally.
Not the ally, yes, that's right. Not that I'm not an ally, but you're an activist where I'm not an activist.
I have been.
Do you feel that oftentimes the gay community is too sensitive to things like the Phil Robertson stuff?
You know, the gay community is difficult to pinpoint because there are so many different personalities and so many different representatives, like Bill Browning being a typical example. He has a huge platform. He has a huge following. The Balerco Report is very popular. And then things happen where he's just the most catty bitch that I could ever imagine. And I say that lovingly. And I, you know, Bill's a friend of a friend. So we have a lot of interaction. But like recently, Brian Boitano came out of the closet. And I know everybody's shocked that the figure skater's gay, but his response to it was just so negative. And he was, you know, why doesn't every celebrity come out as, you know, whatever? And from my standpoint, I'm like, that guy's getting ready to go to the Olympics in, I believe, in Russia, mm-hmm. where they're going to lynch people for being gay. I
right.
mean, you could tell right now, the writing's on the wall. They intend to collect them. And so that was a huge,
right.
tremendous act of bravery and valor from my perspective. And all Bill can do is bitch about the fact that it took him so long. And so
right.
it's difficult to pinpoint the voice of the community. Do I think that they're sensitive? Yes, but who isn't?
Sure.
Do I think the Christians are sensitive? Yes.
Totally. And
and it's not like it's a Christians versus LGBT situation at this point, because a lot of churches have come around recently. I mean, even the Pope has come out and said,
yeah.
you know, we can't make this the divisive issue any longer. It's to the detriment of both the church and mankind.
The Pope said kind of what I said, which, you know, me and the Pope, totally comparable.
Totes
comparable.
Yeah.
Pope Francis, by the way, totes adorbs.
Right.
But the Pope basically said, like, hey, what about the poor people? Hey, remember them?
Right.
Like, who gives a crap about the gay people?
And like, so I'm going to come out on record as very pro-Pope,
right.
which is not something I've done in a very long time.
Right. Yeah, I'm liking this guy. Let's talk about the sensitivity of the Christians. Totally, totes sensitive, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, I understand that Christians feel that there is a persecution of Christianity going on because the culture is changing, okay? I don't think that if there was a cartoon, let's say Cyanide and Happiness, did a Christmas special in the vein of Charlie Brown, I don't think that there would be the Linus speech about the what Christmas stands for.
Right.
I don't think that they'd even do it Christmas specific. But even back in the day when the Charlie Brown special was in the mid-60s, Schultz had to put his foot down with the network and make sure that was put in. Like, he said, we're not doing it if you don't put in the Christian stuff. Put in the
Good
explanation.
For him, though.
Yeah. I mean, he said, I'm not going to do it if I can't share my values in it. The Duck Dynasty people are a rare example of Christians in the media where they are not a sideshow. Like, there's Preachers of L.A. on Oxygen.
Which, I've not seen this.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like, I love it because it's just so bad and so outrageous. And it's the whole setup is like these guys don't realize that they're just being held up for mockery, much like the Housewives people. But the Duck Dynasty.
But really, aren't all of us in some way, shape, or form being held up for mockery? Anytime you open your mouth,
that's why we do this podcast.
Exactly.
But no, they're like it's like a prank. It's like they're setting up the show so people can watch this because it's outrageous that these preachers drive around in Mercedes and all this. But the Duck Dynasty guys, they're treated with the show is produced with a respectful tone. Like these are their values. They pray to Jesus at the end.
And every time they have a meal, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and apparently 50% of the country is hungry for that sort of entertainment because anytime there's something wholesome like Duck Dynasty, it shoots through the roof. It's people love it because it shares their values.
I think, like, the Roseanne Barr show was a good example of that, mm-hmm. too, where it wasn't like pious, but it was a good snapshot of what the average American household was like at the time.
I would say Modern Family is wholesome. Modern Family is about a family that loves each other, you know, differing members of the family, but they all learn something at the end. But my point is that the Duck Dynasty people are one of the rare exceptions of Christians in the modern media,
right,
where they're not being mocked. And so when something like this happens, Christians react as if, oh, God, literally, oh, God, we are being persecuted because now we can't say that we believe that homosexuality is a sin, which is very clear in Romans, okay? The act of it, what is sort of, don't jump on me yet.
I'm not jumping.
But the Christians, what the Bible teaches is that the act is sinful, not the person. And so many times that just gets lost in all the shuffle. And that people, like, the one aspect of their lifestyle or one aspect of their beliefs becomes the entirety of that person.
So if two gay men got married but both took vows of celibacy, how would the church feel?
That would be acceptable to a Bible-believing church.
No kidding.
I would think so.
I've known of lesbians who were together for 50-plus years and celibate. One of them had spent time in a convent, and they just... It was the compassion and the relationship that mattered.
The New Testament teaches that any sex outside of a marriage is sinful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The Bible never really defines... Its marriage is exemplified and defined in different ways throughout the Bible, but it is always between men and women. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's between men and several hundred women. So...
A handful of slaves. How do you properly sell your daughter into slavery?
Yeah, like they... Adultery, not cool, unless it's with the slave girl. But it's crazy. So anyways...
Isaac and Ishmael.
But
what I was going to mention, though, is I don't know the specific passage in Romans that you're referring to, but I have studied under people who believe that there has been a... Right? I've been studying under people. Anyway, people that believe that there have been translations.
Sure.
And so one of the words that has been succinctly summed up as homosexuality actually referred to an act of purchasing sex from a minor. So like there was a practice, I believe, in Rome where you could purchase, I want to say, an arsentiqua. I don't remember the word. Anyway, it was a young man who sold his anus for copulation. So it was saying that to purchase sex from a young boy for this purpose is a sin. And so that, because we don't have that in our culture, in our society, when it was translated, became homosexual because it was a simple way of translating it and breaking it down.
Yeah, Sophocles was one of the reasons he was killed was because he didn't have sex with little boys. And if you read the Symposium, I mean, it's they're mocking him for not being gay.
Yeah.
Like it's really interesting. But My larger point, as we so often meander here, you know, and I get us off track, but...
Sorry.
No, not you, it's me. It's not you, it's me, Gina. The point is that I understand why Christians feel the way that they feel. Like, they can't express the belief that marriage is between one man and one woman without being persecuted for it. But that didn't happen to Phil Robertson. He took it to terrorism and bestiality and equated them by lumping them in a group, and that's why he's in trouble, people.
The free market is what is hurting Phil Robertson.
Right. And, you know, they see the Ten Commandments being ruled against. I get that feeling that Christians are being persecuted, but nobody's going to jail. Nobody is being beaten up for being Christians. It's really sort of a weird thing. And then, you know, so they try and fight back, and every year we get the War on Christmas stuff from Bill O'Reilly. And then this year with Megyn Kelly saying that Jesus and Santa were white. I didn't actually hear it, and she kind of said that I didn't actually say that. So I don't want to misquote her. Do you know what she actually said?
No, I only know the news story. I didn't read the actual text.
Yeah.
And to me, it's, well, if she did say that, it'd be very highly unlikely that he would, in fact, have, you know, look like an Englishman.
Right.
Santa,
maybe. At least Saint Nick.
Right. Santa Claus, spoiler alert, parents. You know what I'm saying? So, Santa Claus was a creation of, you like that?
Yeah.
Of Clement Moore, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, with illustrations by, who is the famous illustrator for the New York newspaper? It's Clement Moore, and gosh, I can't think of it right off the top of my head. Very famous illustrator. But that was like 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, before that, it goes back to Black Pete. Black Peter. Don't get excited. Black Peter gets...
this is a record for the show.
I know, this is a filthy show.
totally unintentional, too.
That's what she said. So, you know, St. Nicholas, and it all fits into the fact that Christmas is more from a pagan holiday. So, a pagan festival. You know, like, so Santa Claus was invented in a time when largely white people were the only figures in any kind of media whatsoever.
You're talking about Robert Ingpen? Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't even think so. I'll look it up once I let Greg talk here in a minute. So,
or Cooper Edens.
No. Mm. Santa Claus has been, it's like Thanksgiving, it's like not Thanksgiving, it's like a Valentine's Day. It's been created by Hallmark,
yeah.
Essentially.
It's a stimulus program.
Right. So
Rudolph was created by Macy's.
Right.
Thank God.
Right. Right.
I think they enriched the culture in the community. I don't see any
negative about
it. It definitely
adds to the festivity of the holiday and the celebration.
Right.
And that's why I don't get that whole criticism of, well, Christmas is just so commercial. I don't embrace it. You know, that whole opinion of I'm too good for the commercialization of Christmas. Like,
well, I mean, when it serves a good purpose, Christmas is amazing. But when it, like, there are families out there who go damn near bankrupt putting Christmas on credit cards, and to that extent it doesn't bother me when someone chooses to abstain from the commerciality of Christmas.
Right. Thomas Nast is who I was thinking of, very famous illustrator from the yellow journalism days after the Civil War. But yeah, I listen, total Christmas is totally commercial, and you have to have the right mindset for it. I mean, we didn't spend a lot of money, but it's nice to give gifts. I don't even care about giving. I don't care about getting gifts, honestly, because I'm the type of person that if I have extra money, then I go buy myself treats.
Right.
Like this new Bose mini SoundLink, which is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life, or heard, I mean.
It does have amazing sound quality.
It does. That's my Christmas treats. Like, that's what I really wanted,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so
I'm getting wiper blades for Christmas. That's what I've asked for.
Yeah.
So, but like, and I gave you guys presents.
Yeah.
Before
which
the show
was
here.
So sweet.
Very nice.
I enjoy giving presents. I would have appreciated something in return, but
you we guys both apparently think you smell, and it was the walk of shame day.
I actually bought you something, but I Didn't know we were doing a gift
that
exchange.
That old gag, right.
Fine. Yeah. I won't bring it.
Not you know, I'm on a podcast with two selfish people that don't care about me.
We are libertarians.
It's our freedom.
No, but I enjoy...
I'm busy building roads.
Yeah.
I enjoy giving presents more than getting them, but, you know, that's my attitude. So.
I agree. That's why I enjoy it. I think I love the... There's an atmosphere around Christmas that's very fun.
Right.
I love Christmas music. Listen to it. Crap, start in middle of November.
Same here. Holiday classics on Sirius XM, best. Love it.
And so, like, I can't understand the... I mean, yeah, don't go out and spend a bunch of money, but then don't also complain, because, heck, it's the only time of year most Americans are in a great mood all together at the same time.
Right.
I know not everybody likes Christmas, but I, you know, it's the one month out of the year where everybody just kind of gets to relax, get to have fun. I had a bunch of office Christmas parties where I got to meet a lot of new people and kind of get comfortable in a new situation. But you're not in work. You're not slaying the dragon. You're just kind of getting together and hanging out with coworkers. You're getting together and hanging out with friends. You know, that you're exchanging some eggnog or whiskey.
Right. Or both.
Or other things. But, you know, there's... You never know what...
Poor Greg.
Sorry. But... The atmosphere is just fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is. I love it. I absolutely love it.
I do too.
The only ones I really feel bad for are like the Jehovah's Witnesses. Who get completely left out. And I mean,
they leave themselves. I don't feel bad for them.
When you go around knocking on people's doors.
Right.
Yeah.
That you bring it upon yourself.
Hey, we ran for office. Stop it.
But we didn't knock on doors. We took the lazy approach. You're like, we got a website, okay?
Yeah. I'm going to Facebook you.
Hey.
So vote for me. But yeah, I love the Christmas season.
Yeah. The Jesus thing being white, though, what are your thoughts on...
That's so ridiculous. It's not even funny. Like, to think that Jesus was the modern image of Jesus, who was probably, you know, the image of the long-haired Jesus with the long flowing hair and the white robes, that was invented by the church in the Middle Ages with the paintings on the walls, to control the population. Because the church in the Middle Ages was another form of government force. You know, it was another form of government that ruled and wanted to keep populations in check and make them pay for the privilege and manipulated them. And so that image of Jesus to look like the Middle Age
European
was another form of control. Jesus was a Jew from 2,000 years ago. And... was olive-skinned with dark curly hair and a beard that was probably short-cropped and wore the traditional clothes of a Nazarene carpenter, which looked nothing like, you know, Buddy Christ from Dogma.
Angelic, you know what I mean? Robes.
Right. So his clothes were probably dirty and covered in stuff.
You know what I was thinking?
Soot and all that stuff.
He probably looked a lot like Rupert.
Probably. That's a very good point.
You know what?
Google Rupert from Survivor, and that's what Jesus looked
that's
like.
That's probably a lot like what Jesus looked like.
Rupert's mom is from Syria, emigrated here as a child, so she's full-blooded Syrian from roughly Damascus. And so Rupert is a great example of what Jesus probably looked like. Yep, that's very good. Look at you.
Look at you, drawing lines.
Not Jesus now, like not Rupert now, like Rupert from like 10 years ago, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. How old was Jesus when he was crucified?
33. Right. So, but yeah, Rupert back in the early Survivor days, that's what he looked like. So Rupert would kill me for saying that.
He's like, I look better now. I got my teeth fixed. I'm lost weight.
Okay.
I would like to picture Jesus on the back of a Harley. Yeah, I can see that.
Jesus totally would have smoked cigarettes and had that voice. That would be awesome if he had that voice. It's like, what's up, brother? Okay. All right, kiddies. I don't know what our point was with this last thing. We try to have a point.
No, it was about... Megyn Kelly,
and
we don't want to miss. Yeah, we don't want to misquote her, but I have a feeling she said it and pandered to her audience, and I feel like that's what Fox does. That's what Fox is going to do, and if that infuriates you, Listen to We Are Libertarians.
That's right. It's more of the culture wars. Just another example of how we're being distracted while other things are going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, well, let's wrap up here. Final thoughts. Get on your soapbox, Greg's lens.
I'm going to give Barack Obama some praise, assuming this is actually this happened. I only read the headline. I didn't read the entire thing.
I'm sorry. I've turned your microphone off. Gina, go ahead.
You're going to love this. So Russia, you know, they keep Pussy Riot in jail. They hate homosexuality. Well, apparently the people we're sending over as part for the Winter Olympics. Barack Obama is trolling Vladimir Putin by sending only lesbians to the Winter Olympics as representatives of the United States.
What does that mean? Like, as what?
As representatives of the athletes. For
like our delegates.
Our delegates are all lesbians, and he's sending them the Sochi for the Winter Olympics. And I thought that is epic trolling. Well done.
So, like, as part of not like all the athletes, like in the men's slalom, they're not actually lesbians, but like the people who are dealing with the high official. Kinda.
They're like diplomats. Yeah, right. Ambassadors. Yep.
They are all lesbians, and that is fantastic.
That is awesome.
Well done, sir. Yeah. Well done.
Who surfs on the back of a shark now?
Exactly.
Suck it.
Exactly.
You go next. I have another Olympics-related thing.
I was just going to say, you know, look into the CISPA thing, see if there's any truth to it, because I suck at researching, so you should do it for me. It is the holidays, so have a heart and find a way to give back to somebody in your community, even if it's taking like a decent amount of canned goods or a blanket to a cold homeless person that you pass on the street, because there are people out there who don't have families and don't have the luxury of feeling the love this time of year, and it's nice to share with them.
My final tidbit, just a random fact. Did you know that in the 1996 Georgia Olympics, in every athlete's hotel room, the state of Georgia printed up plaques and put in all the hotel rooms that any form of sodomy and oral sex was illegal, and that you could go to jail or be fined for participating in anal or oral sex?
Any oral sex?
They specifically, any oral sex, yeah.
Well, thank God Bill Clinton wasn't an athlete.
I read a study once, like 80% of females can't achieve orgasm without some sort of oral stimulation. So I'm guessing Georgia was pretty miserable.
We will cover that on Storytime with Gina next.
All right, clearly.
But they did that specifically for the Olympics, because apparently people in Atlanta thought that every European was gay. I'm not sure or what, but... and basically, if you look at that Obama photo, the Get Talking photo, doesn't that guy look like he's French?
Yes, really? He does.
Or some sort of French Canadian.
You know what? That's what bothers me. It's not so much that gender neutrality, it's that they're European looking.
Right. Exactly.
We're becoming more European. That's what it is.
That's what bothers you.
It's time for Patriotism 101 to be in all schools.
Nice.
All right. Well, as a wonderful Christmas gift, we have given you another We Are Libertarians, and we, Santa Spangle, will provide later this week as well when our buddy Creighton returns. So look for us next week. We hope you have a Merry Christmas. Take that, non-Christians.
Happy holidays, happy holidays, happy holidays.
We hope you had a nice Hanukkah, and I doubt anyone who celebrates Kwanzaa is listening. But if you are, Merry Kwanzaa.
Merry Kwanzaa!
And listen, Festivus for the rest of us, if you do that, then...
Airing of grievances this Sunday.
That's generally this is what this show is about, the airing of grievances. And then we're going to have feats of strength afterwards. Ironically, Gina wins every time. So she may be small, but she packs a powerful punch in those tiny fists of fury. So thank you for listening. We hope you have a nice holiday, a nice relaxing week, and we hope we didn't say anything that will end our career.
And as always,
we promise to do better next time.
You stole my line.
Haha.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.